Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.
If you've just joined us, welcome to Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media. Of course, the name of the show, it is Business Sense right here on AWR. You can talk to us on 0734703520, 0734703520. Our Facebook page is Adventist World Radio SID Media. That is Adventist World Radio SID Media. And our Twitter handle is AWRSID_media. You can listen to us on Ayono FM. You can listen to us and stream us live on www.sidmedia.org. That's certainly where you can find us. And on Streamer as well, we are also available there. And on Radio Garden, right? You have so many platforms in which you can join us. Of course, you can also go to your app store and download our app. Search there for Adventist World Radio SID Media. You should find that app right there. Today is a Monday, of course. On Mondays, what we do is we talk personal finance. Right, and you can join us on, like I said, 0734703520. That's the number that you can use to WhatsApp us if you do have any comments or any questions that you might like to bring. Well, this evening, as we do every Monday, we're talking about a topic that obviously affects our personal finances in some shape or form. And today, we are tackling the issue of short-term insurance, right? Very easy to confuse it. Very easy to, I suppose, be misled by some of the financial service providers out there, and even individuals that operate within the space. If you don't have a thorough understanding of what we're talking about when you're talking about short-term insurance, well, we are going to demystify this. And Joy Maleta is, of course, on the line to talk to us about this one. Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening, Tepelo. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. And yourself?
I'm good, thank you. Just caution, I am being loaded at the moment.
So okay.
If there's a bit of, a disturbance, it's probably the network. But I'm hoping that it'll stay stable for the duration of our talk this evening.
Indeed, I hope so as well. The fact that we've got you online gives me hope. And I'm holding on to that little glimmer of hope that we got you online. So definitely we are going to continue on that one. And your day?
My day was good for some reason. I was feeling a bit tired today, but nonetheless, I think it was a good day on your side.
I saw a meme that I saw yesterday, which I think summarized how I felt. My next week is already tiring as it is. And I'm not at next week as yet, but but nonetheless, we are good. Had a good day here and there, but nonetheless, we are here. We're talking about short-term insurance, right? Like I said, I think it's quite easy to just confuse the different financial products and where they fall within the two or three categories. I suppose we then expect certain things only to find that, no, this financial product is a short-term insurance and it's not a long-term insurance product. And as such, the benefits are not what you might have thought they might be. Because I find that we buy these financial products sometimes out of duress, right? We feel like, I was listening to the show and I felt like I need to buy X or invest in this. And only to find that sometimes the T's and C's, we don't have a thorough understanding of them. And we thought, let's look at this topic of short-term insurance because it is a very, very important one. I was actually reading up on some financial magazine, which you won't mention, of course, but I was reading there that, they had a case of someone who was claiming a death, right? I know it's a bit of a bad example to use, but they're claiming a bit of a death in a short-term insurance provider is like, but we don't cater for such, right? And I then realized that we take these things for granted, and we think we understand what they are and where they fall and the categories and all this. So I thought this is something that we need to have a talk about this evening, and that's what we're looking at. So right on to it, when we're talking about short-term insurance, what are we talking about?
Yeah, I must admit, though, this is quite a specialized area, right? And so I think I'm obviously not a short-term insurance specialist or anything like that, but there are certain learnings and key things that we can share, I suppose, with our viewers tonight and some of the things to look out for. But short-term insurance is literally as defined, generally by most insurers, is that it's a policy that covers all insurance products except life insurance. Basically, it's all insurance products but life, and for obvious reasons, right? For example, it covers you for a short or limited period of time. I mean, if you think of your vehicle insurance as an example, or household insurance, these are, covers for a limited period of time, and it's not linked to, say, call it your life or anything like that. So yeah, it's call it any other type of insurance other than life insurance is usually referred to as short-term insurance.
Okay, so it's any other than except life, right? So I
except
suppose
life
that's
insurance.
the difference between the two.
Yes, and life would obviously fall under long-term insurance.
And the long-term insurance. Okay, so you've made an example there. Vehicle insurance is one of them, right? So if I take out an insurance on my car, that's definitely not a long-term insurance, right? It's
No,
on
no.
the car itself.
Exactly. It's on the car itself.
Yeah,
It's outside of your life.
yes, I think that's actually the easiest way to actually look at it. Anything outside of your life, where your life is not involved, when you
Yes.
ensure that you're ensuring a
Exactly. It's
short-term
for
insurance.
possession. Short term is usually for possessions, but anything that is linked to your life, either maybe I mean disability, life cover and things which comes with some of the disability sort of elements to it. So anything that's linked to your life would probably be referred to as long term insurance. Whereas anything that is linked to your possessions would be like short term insurance. I think that's probably the easiest way to differentiate between the two.
Okay. Short term, I don't know if it has it has does it have anything to do with the fact that it's a month on month as well?
That too. I mean, even with life policy, right? If I stop paying my premiums, then I don't have cover, right? But it doesn't change, the fact that it's long term.
Oh, I see.
Or it's long-term insurance. But
I see.
so if it covers my belongings, any or my possessions, any my valuables basically outside of my life, my actual life, then it is regarded as short-term insurance. But anything that is linked to my life, I think, would be regarded as long-term.
As long term,
Anything
right?
that is life-changing.
I think we'll try and also explore that as part two when you look at long term insurance, because I think there's a we invest we I suppose put a lot of our money into burial societies, and we're trying to insure our lives there. So a lot of us don't realize what type of insurance is that that we are buying and all that. So that distinction, I suppose, is very, very important. So I love that you've simplified it. Anything that has to do with your life will most probably be long-term insurance. Yeah. And everything that has to do with your possessions. Okay. Why is it important then that I should have short-term insurance?
I think, I mean, let's first define what insurance is, right? Because if I'm insuring something, that means I'm insuring a particular risk, right? A risk event. And what is risk? Which we've defined risk in a lot of our conversations previously, but risk is usually linked to, financial loss. So the possibility or the potential of me actually incurring a financial loss equals risk, right? And so if I take out an insurance product, it means I'm covering that risk. So if it's a life policy, for example, I'm covering the risk of a loss of my life, right? So should I lose my life, there's a risk that there is no income continuation for my family or anything like that. And so I want to make sure that even if I die, my family still has access to the income that they have been, enjoying whilst I was still alive. So I'm covering that's my life, right? So if I'm covering my vehicle as an example, there are certain risks that I'm covering. So I'm either covering the risk of my vehicle getting damaged, right? I'm covering the risk of my vehicle getting stolen, like the risk of theft. Or I'm covering, so if it's vehicle insurance, there's also the element, if it's a comprehensive cover, there's the element of third party liability. So in other words, I'm also covering the risk that I might be the one who damaged someone else's vehicle. So in that event, then you also want the insurer to pay out. So because I'm covering a specific risk as part of the policy that I'm taking out, so the trigger event would be that risk materializing. So it's either the car has to be stolen before the policy pays, or I have to, you know, be involved in an accident before the policy pays. So you're covering a specific risk. So if that risk does not materialize, then I don't get anything from the policy, right? Generally, in general terms. I know these days you've got insurance houses offering you cashbacks and things like that. But that's a by the by. So in other words, if I assess then the risk of that thing, you know, just going back to your question, if I then say, okay, actually, if I assess the risk of that thing and I realize that for me, the loss of my vehicle is high risk, right? So in other words, I won't be able to quickly replace that vehicle, right? Because it's either high value or it's quite an essential, you know, a valuable for me. And therefore, I regard the risk as high on my side and therefore it makes sense for me to actually cover it, right? And there are certain things, I mean, I received a call not so long ago, you know, by one of the, one of these companies offering me insurance for my Dakota.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And for me, I'm willing to live with that risk.
Yeah, I know, right?
To my risk, you know? So it's really around risk assessment for yourself, because I'm thinking it's not essential. If my Dakota breaks, okay, I can do without. And, you know, I can wait until I buy another one.
Yes.
It's really not worth me buying an insurance cover for that particular item. So it really depends around your level of your risk. I would really say it depends on the risk appetite, but there are certain essential valuables where it's high value items, like for example your vehicle, your household content. You would want to make sure that you have those covered. Why? Because you don't know when, you know, an uncertain, unfortunate event is likely to take place. And so in the event, hopefully not, that that thing does take place, you would want to at least be able to recover, you know, or replace that item, you know, in the shortest possible time. So that's really what insurance is there for. And it's essential for those particular purposes.
Yeah.
And again, I still want to emphasize it depends on your risk appetite. For someone, 2,000 Rand might be a lot. For someone, 2,000 Rand is something that, you know, they can easily, you know, cough out and replace that item. It really depends around your risk appetite and how you've assessed whether that thing is valuable or essential to you or not, and whether you would want to have it covered or not.
Sure. That's beautiful. For those of you who've just joined us, you are welcome to Adventist World Radio. Of course, we are powered by SID Media, and the name of the show, it is A Business Sense right here on AWR. We are talking short-term insurance with Joy Maleta, helping us understand what this thing is and what it looks like. You can join the conversation on 0734703520. And of course, we are available on so many platforms, guys. I must say, Iono FM, SIDmedia.org, Streamer, and as well as Radio Garden. You can also download our app on the App Store. That's certainly where we are. All right. So it depends on your risk appetite, right? And I suppose your risk assessment as well. What you may consider as risk might not be what another person considers as risk, right? Especially looking at the possibility of, like you said, potential financial loss. I certainly also don't think there's any loss I'm going to really, really suffer from the Dakota bursting, guys.
Exactly,
like I feel like So yeah, maybe some people might feel like their decoders are like worth a huge financial loss. Like the loss of that decoder might put a dent on their finances. So maybe for some, they might feel like there is a need to do that. But I think that point that you're raising about doing a proper risk assessment of, you know, your possessions. If I lose this car, what is the potential financial loss associated with it? Especially if you think about the fact that if you're not insured on your car and it gets involved in an accident and is beyond repair, you still owe the bank. It does not mean that you don't owe the bank simply because your car is written off. So when you assess that risk, you start realizing that, of course, there might be there's a huge financial loss. Or you bump into these fancy cars one of these days and the headlight costs the whole entire price of your car, you know. Exactly. So you're like, okay, so where will I get that money to do that? So that risk assessment is very, very important. I was just looking at something. A report that was done, I think this was done by one of the insurers, Dial Direct, they're saying that 70% of South African motorists have no insurance.
I read the same report and I cringed because, wow, driving amongst uninsured people out there.
Sure.
So if that person happens to, you happen to get into a, you know, an accident with that person, it's hectic, right? And hopefully you've got comprehensive cover on your side.
Exactly, exactly.
Because that's the risk you face, unfortunately.
So can we unpack that to say if we have about 70% of 11 million cars, 70% of them are not insured in South Africa, what are the implications? So if you get into an accident, there's a high chance, there's a 70% chance that this person is not insured that you just got into an accident with. Is that what it means?
That's exactly what it means, right? But, you know, fortunately, when you're covering risk, whether you are the cause of the accident or not, especially, and I think that's why it's important for us to read the fine print and make sure that we really understand what is covered, right? And what am I buying? Because really, you are buying a product. I need to really understand what I'm buying because you won't go out there and buy an air fryer without knowing how to use it.
Yes.
Right, or what the purpose of an air fryer is. I'm just making an example. So even with a product, you are buying this thing, and so you need to understand what exactly is it that I'm buying. So I'm buying cover that covers me in the event whether, you know, I get into an accident, whether the cause of the accident is myself or the next person. I'm buying this so that if I'm the cause of the accident, my insurer is able to repair the other vehicle. I'm buying this for whatever reason. So you need to understand exactly what is it that you are buying, because in certain instances, you might maybe be buying something that is only covering you for theft. Now you are in an accident, and the other person unfortunately does not have cover.
Yeah.
So that means there's no third party cover that is likely to assist with your repairs if you are not, you know, if you are the third party. So in other words, now you're actually not covered for that risk because you took out a product that only covers you for theft.
Sure.
Right? So now your car is not stolen, but it's damaged. So that damage is not covered because you did not cover for the damage. You only covered for theft. So it's very important that we understand what we are buying, because in certain instances, we are doing this and you are buying a product because you're thinking in your mind, I'm trying to reduce the cost, because obviously, if it's not comprehensive enough, chances are the premiums that you are paying for it or whatever you are paying on a monthly basis for that cover is lower. So now you are, you know, so now you basically underinsured, you know, for the types of risks that you are hoping to cover. So it's not really covering every possible risk that you are anticipating. So that's an undercover, right? So it's very important to really assess and understand, because again, to these particular stats, is that chances are that other person that you get into an accident with is not covered. Should they be the cause of the accident, then it has to be a settlement between you two.
Yeah, and you don't want to chase after someone to pay you and fix
and you
your
are
car.
Going to be chasing after them, I promise you.
Sure.
So that's the unfortunate bit. So if you've got your vehicle insured and it's comprehensive enough, or the cover itself is comprehensive enough, then let that be your insurer's business to chase after that person and try and recover the funds. But then you know that your vehicle is going to be taken care of in the background, you know.
Yeah.
So it's all these things that we just need to really understand and after I've assessed my risk, make sure that so I'm covering myself for one to whatever risk is the product that I'm buying going to cover me for all those risks. And I'm sure there are certain experts in the market that can help us, like some of our financial advisors or brokers in the market that can really help us unpack some of these products and understand exactly what is included in the product and what is not included in the product.
I think you've touched on what was going to be my next question to say, you know, what are some of the main ones that are available in the markets? But you touched on the type of cover, how whether it's comprehensive enough, you know, because sometimes, like you said, we take up these insurance products, for instance, against my car, and sure, was one day I get into an accident and I realize it's not comprehensive, right? And so maybe it doesn't have third-party cover and all those sort of stuff. I wanted us then to sort of spend like a minute dissecting that, you know, explaining that thing so that it is clear to our listeners. I was also looking at the same report. In fact, there's one that was done by Finance, Yahoo Finance, and they estimated that there's over 800,000 accidents in South Africa per year. So that equates to 2,191 accidents a day in South Africa. So if you think about how hectic that is, there's literally a chance that you're going to get into an accident if we have over 2,000 accidents in South Africa every single year. Concentrated, of course, in the metropolitan cities of Johannesburg, Cape Town, Durban. And that's where we are, right? And that's where we drive every single day. So you think about this and you realize we really need to make sure that even the insurance products that we are taking, we're taking them as comprehensive as they possibly can be so that they cover us against this high risk that we have of, one, getting into an accident because there's a lot of accidents that happen a day, but also the fact that the person might not be insured themselves. So vehicle insurance, so we're saying there, let's make sure that it's comprehensive enough to make sure that it covers you. And then, you know, I suppose the retail value of your car or the whatever value of your car, but it's comprehensive enough to cover that. Are there other main ones? You spoke about household contents as well.
Yes, I mean, we get things like your, I mean, you said anything else that is, I mean, you get your old risk cover as an example for some of the contents that you are taking outside of the house, like your jewelry, like your cell phone and things like that. Whilst, of course, you can have a specific cell phone insurance cover, as we know, you know, with some of our cell phone sort of contract providers and things like that. You get, we've mentioned household or home contents, right? Things like travel insurance, which is very, I mean, it's very short term because, again, you know, if you are traveling for a certain duration of time, when you come back, the policy lapses because now you've completed your travel.
Yeah.
So certain things like that where you had covered, remember we said you're covering a specific risk.
Yeah.
So once you are no longer exposed to that risk, you know, it makes no sense for you to continue having that cover. And so it lapses, you know. And so it's things like that. For example, you have car insurance. If your vehicle is no longer, I mean, obviously there's no point in having that cover because what are you covering? So it's all these, you know, when the risk is no longer there, then the cover sort of lapses. So it's the car insurance, home content insurance, travel insurance, cell phone insurance, old risk insurance. So these, I think, are some of the main ones that we know of or that we hear on a regular basis, which obviously cover certain, you know, certain valuables. And car insurance, we've spoken about at length, which is, you know, self-explanatory. You get your home contents, which would cover, obviously, I mean, things like your big ticket items, like the contents within your house, like your furniture in the event that you have maybe like a robbery or your, you know, or things burn, I think, you know, your house burns and you know, there's cover for the contents that were inside the house, which is obviously, I think, quite different to the actual building insurance,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because so the home contents is things that are within or that are housed, you know, within in the household or in the house.
Mm.
And then it's the actual structural, you know, cover that you can then also take out that covers you in the event that something happens to the building,
yeah.
You know, maybe in the, you know, God forbid there's a fire that breaks out and that fire really damages your house and, you know, and so you know that thing gets covered. And there are certain exclusions, guys, you know, sometimes you learn when it comes to insurance covers, where there are certain things that are not covered, like acts of God, guys,
yes,
you know. And like I said, I'm no expert, but I've seen this, and I've seen this in some of my policies as well, because you have to read the fine print.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain things like acts of God that are not covered.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, in recent times, you can actually refer back to this, Thapelo, where there was quite a contentious sort of argument around COVID, right? Whether is COVID regarded as an act of God? You know how it affected a lot of businesses, right?
Yes.
And whether businesses were actually able to claim because they weren't able to operate, right? And it was not by choice. We were in hard lockdown, and so some businesses that weren't regarded as essential services had to close down.
Yeah.
And you know, there was this whole argument on whether the course of the, you know, the business not operating, whether the COVID is then regarded as an act of God, insurance policy not wanting to pay out. So there are certain things like that where we just need to be very careful around, you know, what is called an act of God. If something, maybe some of your items are damaged because of a thunderstorm.
Yeah.
You know, if that covered. You know, do you have specific storm damage cover in some of these, you know, things that you are covering or insuring? So that's why it's very important to really read the fine print and just make sure that if I'm looking for comprehensive cover, is everything that I want covered included in the cover that I'm taking? Or is it, you know, are there certain risks that I can't necessarily insure that are uninsurable, and I'm happy to live without?
Yeah, yeah. You know? If you've just joined us, you are on Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are still talking about short-term insurance, what it is and what it is not. Just on the tip around, you know, the uninsured in your policy. It's amazing how, you know, you read through these documents. It's a stack of documents, right?
Yeah,
that they send to you, and when that agent calls you, you know, they run very, very quickly through the T's and C's, and you find yourself saying, I understand. And they start by saying, remember that if you agree, this call is recorded.
Exactly.
You know, so this call is recorded. But the speed at which they go through those documents, I mean, I understand it's work. They have to go to the next person, make the next sale and all those sort of stuff. I think we get that. But I think a lot of us don't have, I suppose, the guts, and I think that's what we should be doing, right? The guts to actually slow them down, because you're about to make a financial decision here, right?
Exactly.
So it's important that you slow them down a little bit, because that call is recorded. And so there are some things that are not insured that they might have ran you through the call, but it was so quick that you don't remember them. And all of a sudden, you need to claim, and then you realize, no, I can't claim on this. Or you claim ignorantly, thinking it's covered, only for them to come back to you 5 years into the insurance with them, and they say, sorry, ma'am, that part of you know, is not covered, so we can't be. And then we start fighting and having all sorts of things. And I mean, with COVID, what I saw, and I think you might have seen as well, is that there was now, I think it's an article that was written, that insurance companies, especially long-term as well, were now squeezed. Because the claims were just too high.
Exactly.
And they then had to, go back to saying, is this covered? You know, we're now scrutinizing every claim to see whether this is covered or whether this is not covered, because there was just a huge number of claims, both for life and short-term insurance. Well, short-term insurance, of course, with the cars parked and all that. But being at home with your kids, something burns, the whole house almost catches a fire. You know, you want to claim and all those sort of stuff. So there was this big claims or big claims that were now made on insurance companies. And that thing of what is insured, what is not insured, was becoming more and more important. I would then say, I don't know if you'd agree with me, but I would then say sometimes you need to seek some advice, right, before you sign on that dotted line.
You do need some advice, you know, and hopefully things that come with underwriting.
Yeah.
Where your risk gets underwritten and you really understand, you know, it's that whole risk assessment basically we're talking about.
Yeah.
And because we are no experts in this, it's very important. And I think if you look at some of the parties, in this whole, call it the market,
yeah,
the insurance market that we're talking about, is that you do get advisors like your brokers or any of your intermediaries, right?
Mm.
Yeah, like the middle persons in this whole deal, where they then connect you as the buyer of the product.
Yeah.
To the insurance and to the seller of the product, which is the insurance house. So you do get people like that who need to, number one, they need to be registered, right, to actually be called those intermediaries.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be registered because there is a whole regulation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a regulated environment. The insurance market is a regulated environment. Right, and so as with most of the financial products that are available out there, is that they are regulated, right, by the Financial Sector Conduct Authority,
yep,
right, or under the, I suppose the umbrella or the portfolio of the Minister of Finance, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a regulated environment, and
yeah,
so you want to make sure that you've got a fallback. Right, because the regulation is there to also protect you as the consumer, right, as the buyer.
Mm.
And so if you are going to go with dodgy people that aren't regulated, you don't have a leg to fall back on, right? And it's a lengthy process to actually get them to even, account.
Mm.
So the best way is to make sure that, for these financial products, that we go to people who are registered and, you know, brokers that are going to give us advice that is bound by certain regulations.
Yeah.
They can't just give you false advice.
Mm.
And they are, you know, they need to be giving you good advice. And also these companies, I think they are required by law to make sure that whatever they are selling is, you know, whatever they are giving is a fair sort of product or whatever the outcome of the assessment is fair at the end of the day, you know. So I think it's very important that we do seek advice. Proper advice for some of the products, and just that we, especially for like big sort of decisions that we are making, or things that we, you know, where we are covering a, you know, high risk sort of item, where we regard the financial loss as quite massive for us.
Mm.
So it's very important that we get the right advice and that we don't just wing it, because if we wing it, then we run the risk of what we were talking about, that under insurance.
Mm.
And so what was the point? So in other words, I've been paying all this time, but I've actually been paying for nothing. And you can't go back and claim.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You've been paying for nothing, and that's the reality of the matter.
Mm.
Right? And again, sorry, whilst we're talking on this, I think it's quite important, which I'm digressing a bit from the topic, not this particular topic, you know, but there are certain things we are always, when I caution against, the education covers, where sometimes we are buying a risk product, not an investment product, that if my child, when my child finishes school, the policy is going to pay for their education.
Yeah.
Whereas I took a risk product, which was sort of like a knife cover, in inverted commas, that would only pay for my child's education in the event that I'm no longer there.
Yes.
So those are some of the things that
yes.
you just also need to be aware of.
Yeah.
What exactly am I buying?
Mm.
You know,
mm.
what is the risk that is being covered here?
Mm.
So am I buying an investment policy that is going to pay out, you know, when my child is at school,
mm.
therefore cover for their tuition?
Mm.
Or am I buying something that is going to be triggered by a certain event? Because remember, we said insurance policies have got a trigger event.
Mm.
And if and that trigger event is basically what I've insured.
Mm.
So if I'm insuring my child's education over my life,
mm.
as an example, that's my child's education, but the only way that it pays out is if I, in the event that I die,
mm.
then I need to die first before it pays out.
Mm.
So it's things like that that I suppose those certain nuances that we need to be careful of, and
yeah.
then asking our advisors to say, what is the trigger event for this policy? So those are some of the questions that we ought to be asking. What exactly is covered here? So what happens if I don't die?
Mm.
Or what happens if this doesn't happen? Then what is the outcome?
Mm.
So it's about asking those questions so you get the right, and then you sign. Because they, I suppose they also need to give you a letter where you sign for the advice.
Yeah.
You know, where you're supposed to sign as a record of advice,
mm-hmm.
you know, as proof that you've received this advice,
mm.
and this is what the advice said from this broker, because again, we've said they are regulated. So in the event that you then go back and say, oh, but you did not tell me,
mm.
they then pull out that paper to say, no, but I did tell you.
Mm.
And unfortunately, if we don't read, which is the unfortunate thing, is if we don't read, you would have signed, and what proof are you going to give to say, but this person made me sign, but I actually did not really understand,
yeah.
because you signed, right? So those are some of the things that before you really put your signature on paper,
mm.
is that understand exactly what you could be signing mm. your life without knowing.
Without
so you really
knowing.
Need to know what you are signing.
So I want to confirm first, you're not digressing, right? Because I think it's a very important point. You just reminded, because I was just scrolling through my messages right now. I received a similar message from the paid TV provider, you know, the other one from Randburg,
yes.
Somewhere there in
the
Randburg.
The one that we know.
Yeah, the one that we know. It's there by Randburg. they sent me a message, because I think they're probably the ones who called you earlier on to talk about insurance for your decoder. But they sent me an SMS with a link for me to buy. I think they said something like, you know, click on this link to protect your family and buy for 12 months and buy their subscription. And I think it was at $50 or something like that. So I'm clicking, I'm like, yeah. $50? You know, I'm following that because I'm like considering how much am I paying for that thing there by Randburg. And so I follow that link. And when I follow that link, it says 50 rand for 12 months. And I'm very excited. I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to do this for my family, right? My mother at home and all those sort of stuff, 50 rand. And then, you know, because obviously, you know, they keep harassing you and all the stuff. So you share this stuff and all that. So I'm like, okay, 50 rand a month looks good. Then I read that thing, right? It said 50 rand a month for 12 months in the event that you die. I was like, oh. So if I didn't read this thing properly, I would have signed up for that thing without understanding what it is. So they're not saying 50 rand for your family. They're saying in the event that you die, then it's 50 rand for them for the next 12 months. And I'm like, this is very sneaky. You know, it's very sneaky advertising. And so if you don't read the fine print, then you might find yourself in trouble. Which then goes back to the point that you're making, that, for instance, when you buy a financial product with let's say a vehicle insurance with company X, right? There's that one that claims to always pay you out. Let's say you take an insurance company with an insurance product with them for your vehicle. The law says they are not the agent that you are talking to will not give you financial advice, right?
No,
they will just tell you what you are buying. You are buying this. This is how much it's going to cost you. These are the exclusions. These are the inclusions. This is what it means. Blah blah blah. When can we start debiting? Because that's the most important question. When can we start debiting? And so they can't give you advice. And I think that's where we think we can wing this thing at times. We downplay the importance of financial advisors and the work that they do to help us understand. Because that guy on the other side of the phone, he's not allowed or she's not allowed to give you financial advice. Exactly.
Yes.
You know, they just tell you what you are buying, how much it's going to cost, blah, blah, blah. But then a financial advisor can sit with you and look at all these things, analyze them for you, right, and give you advice based on what they're seeing and your financial situation at that particular point in time. Perhaps you can afford this one, you can afford that one, you can because sometimes we squeeze ourselves, and I'm not one to be against insurance, insuring our products, because you know you might suffer a financial loss, that's true, but we need to do it in such a way that overall your financial position is better. Because then it's not serving the purpose that it's supposed to serve, which is to help you preserve, I suppose, what you have. But if it's preserving it at the expense of your own financial position, then I think at the end of the day, we are still working counterproductive. And that's where a financial advisor can sit down with you and say, look, based on this and that, your risk appetite, your risk assessment, and do a proper risk assessment of where you are, what potential risks are there, and then you can arrive at a better position in terms of buying financial products. I think we're taken by the hype at times, right? Taken by the hype, and we make those financial mistakes that I think could be avoided if we had just taken the call and gave our financial advisor a call to just have a proper understanding and context of everything.
Precisely, spot on, 100%. I can't add or subtract from anything that you said.
Which then leads me to my next question. What happens if I cancel my policy? What are the implications?
Listen, you can cancel your policy at any time, from what I understand.
Yep.
And the implications is that no premium equals no cover.
Yeah.
So literally, these are month-to-month contracts.
Mm.
That you enter into, and if I do not pay the premium 1 month, you know, if the premium, if they can't collect the premium for whatever reason, I'm sure they do have certain rules in place, but generally, if there is no premium, there is no cover.
Yeah,
generally, yeah. So if you can stop at any time, and I think also again, maybe just going back to the previous point that you were mentioning there.
Mm.
Around, you know, the importance of reading the fine print and why sometimes, you know, we'll be on the call with the agent and they say 1, 2, 3, is that when they are done with that call, they will follow on with your policy document. And it's important that at that point you read that policy document, because generally there are certain cooling off periods.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I think it's quite regulated, right?
Yeah.
The cooling off period or the minimum period they need to give you.
Yeah.
So there is a cooling off period where even though they would have deducted the premium, you can still claim, you know, if you decide not to continue with the policy within a certain period of time.
Yeah.
So once you, even if they say, okay, we'll deduct the premium today, and they send you that policy document, when you read that policy document and you find out, no, hang on, actually, there were certain things that you did not understand while on the call, and you're quite not happy, you know, you're not quite happy, rather, with whatever is contained in that document, that you can actually call and cancel at that time, and they have, you know, they have to refund you, you know, because then you haven't, you're obviously not covered for that period or for that month. So it's very important that when they send you that policy document, that you actually do read it. And sometimes, you know, what I do is that even when you're sitting with, you know, your financial advisor, whatever, they say, sign here.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're very quick to sign. Just read. Ask that person to give you time to read. Like, give me a moment to read this thing, and you sit down and you read.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, they are going to get commission, and which means that you're paying them. So make sure that, you know, it's you're paying for their time and their advice. So make sure that you, you know, you utilize
that
you
time.
Get the value out of it.
Yeah.
And so sit down and read the thing. Right? Because again, like you said, it's an allocation from your finances that you're making. So there's something that you now need to account for in your budget. And something that might, it's an opportunity cost for something else that you could have done.
Yeah.
So the least you can do is make sure that you're getting value for whatever it is that you're allocating to your budget. So read the document and ask the questions. When you don't understand, what does this mean here? So that they explain it to you. What does this mean there? So that they explain it to you, so that you're able to then say, I'm comfortable with this cover, or I'm not comfortable with this cover, and therefore I'm not going to sign.
Yeah.
Or I'm comfortable, and therefore I'm going to sign. So we shouldn't rush into this whole sign here, sign there, sign there. And they will make crosses for you where to
Exactly,
sign. You know, they will
exactly.
take sign here, sign here, sign here. And they're, and you look at that document, it's just so wordy.
Yeah.
But you haven't even read a single line, but you signed. And that's where the catch is.
Yeah.
So it's in that fine print where the catch is, and you need to, and that's where you need to spend your time.
Definitely.
So everything else where they say you're going to get, you know, a cover with, you know, 30,000 for this, this for that, that's all going to be, you know, in high print, in big print, and bold sometimes.
Exactly.
But where the fine print, where the T's and C's apply, that's really where you need to focus your time and energies on. You need to make sure that you read and you understand that thing before you sign your thing away. Because again, although this is regulated, there are certain things that are permissible and there are certain things that can be done. So if you are the one who did not read properly, then you are at fault.
Yeah.
Then you can't, you know, blame someone else for your lack of understanding purely because you were negligent and you did not read.
Yeah, certainly. I think the regulated cooling off period is around 30 days for most of these products. So you're quite right that, you know, you've got 30 days to just look at it and read through it. Just spend a section of it a day if you can't, you know, like take 1 hour or 2 hours of your time. But I also, you know, was thinking about what you're saying because the fonts all of a sudden change as well when they get to these strong terms and conditions. But the font on the other is like Arial 20. You're like, okay, this is so bold. But on Arial 8, that's where you should be spending your time. If you wear glasses like me, then that's where you should be wearing glasses because that's where the rubber hits the road, right?
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's very sneaky, I must say. But anyways, it's something for that.
The saving paper.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, that makes sense. Definitely saving paper there. And in the process, putting ourselves in danger. I think there's quite a lot of other questions, but I don't want us to go through it because of time. I just want us then to address the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
There is an elephant in the room. And that elephant in the room is, I am Christian. And I believe in God.
Yeah.
And I believe God can protect my things. Right?
Yes.
Do I necessarily need cover?
You know what? Let us not take God for granted and be presumptuous around the whole debate and debacle, right?
Because
in as much as we pray for God's protection, we don't sleep with the doors of our house and our gates wide open because, you know, God is protecting us. I think there are certain things that are within our control that we can, and I believe insurance is something that is within our control.
Yeah.
And there are certain things that are outside of our control, such as someone stealing, you know, and I mean, you know, it's a consequence of sin. Bad things do happen and they are going to happen. And so, are we saying that then God is not existing in other people's lives where these things happen and therefore you have to be the exception? And I'm not saying that God is unable to protect us, and I'm sure God is protecting us from so many things that we don't even know He's protecting us from, you know. But there are certain things that are within our control that we can manage ourselves. And assessing your financial loss is one of that thing. You know, it's one of those things that are within your control, and so we shouldn't be presumptuous here and be negligent.
Yeah.
And sort of call it, you know. And if you can take cover out and you refuse because you're Christian, I don't think it makes you more Christian. You know, not having cover.
Yes.
Or not. That's just my personal view. I have to be very clear.
I am 100% with you on that one.
It's my personal view. So I will not be negligent and I will not be very, you know, I will not really, you know, blame God for my negligence, for things that are within my control, for things that, you know, that I could have taken care of. And He's going to protect my life, you know. But he could have protected my life, where I was held at gunpoint. God forbid that does not happen.
Mm-hmm.
I was held at gunpoint and my car was taken.
Mm.
My life was preserved because God protected me.
Yeah.
But the possession was taken.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen there? I mean, it's an essential, you know, it's an essential for me because I do need my vehicle right. I'm getting from point A to B. But if I did not have cover, my life is spared. And thank God my life has been spared.
Mm.
And now what happens to that other thing that was taken, you know, because I did not have cover?
Yeah.
So it's things like that that we just need to, I don't think it has anything to do with being Christian or not. Because even when we leave our houses, we pray for God to protect us and to make sure that we don't get into accidents and that, you know, we don't encounter such eventualities or such unfortunate situations. But, you know, sometimes life does happen, and sometimes we do say life is unfair.
Yeah.
And why? Because it's a result of sin, unfortunately. These things are happening and they are going to happen. And so where we can prepare for them, not that you are preparing to, you know, to obviously, you know, but where you're covering the risk, that's preparation, right? Where you can be prepared, at least for the risk of that thing happening, and make sure that, you know, you prepare well for it.
Indeed, indeed. Ma'am, thank you so much. We shall continue again next week. And thank you so much for the insights as well. God bless you.
God bless. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Osis Joy Malete helping us understand the insurance industry, especially the short-term insurance, and why that is important.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.